The Book of Three by Lloyd Alexander, read by Jack Skoda, Randolph, Vermont, 2004. Chapters 19 and 20. Chapter 19, The Secret. Sunlight streamed through the high window of a chamber pleasantly cool and fragrant. Taran blinked and tried to lift himself from the low, narrow couch. His head spun. His arm, swathed in white linen, throbbed painfully. Dry rushes covered the floor. The bright rays turned them yellow as wheat. Beside the couch, a white, sun-dappled shade stirred and rose up. Henwen wheezed and, chuckling, grinned all over her round face. With a joyful grunt, she began nuzzling Taran's cheek. His mouth opened, but he could not speak. A silvery laugh rang from a corner of the chamber.
"You really should see your expression. You look like a fish that's climbed into a bird's nest by mistake."
Elonwy rose from the oyster stool.
"I was hoping you'd wake up soon. I can't imagine how boring it is to watch someone sleep. It's like counting stones in a wall."
"Where have they taken us? Is this Anvawin?" Elonwy laughed again and shook her head.
"That's exactly the sort of question you might expect from an assistant pigkeeper. Anvawin. Ugh. I wouldn't want to be there at all. Why must you always think of unpleasant things? I suppose it's because your wound probably did something to your head. You're looking a lot better now than you did, though you still have that greenish-white color, like a boiled leek."
"Stop chattering and tell me where we are." Taran tried to roll from the couch, then sank back weakly and put his hand to his head.
"You aren't supposed to get up yet," Elonwy cautioned, "but I imagine you've discovered that for yourself."
Wriggling and grunting loudly, the delighted Henwen had begun to climb onto the couch. Elonwy snapped her fingers.
"Stop that, Hen," she ordered. "You know he isn't to be disturbed or upset, and especially not sat on."
The girl turned again to Taran.
"We're in Caer Dithil," she said. "It's a lovely place, much nicer than Spiral Castle."
Taran started up at once as memories flooded over him.
"The Horned King," he cried. "What happened? Where is he?" "In a barrel, most likely, I should think."
"Is he dead?"
"Naturally," answered the girl. "You don't think he'd stand for being put in a barrel if he wasn't, do you? There wasn't a great deal of him left, but what there was got buried."
Elonwy shuddered.
"I think he was the most terrifying person I've ever met, and that includes Artrin. He gave me a dreadful tossing about just before he was going to smite you."
She rubbed her head.
"For the matter of that, you pulled away my sword rather roughly. I told you and told you not to draw it, but you wouldn't listen. That's what burned your arm."
Taran noticed the black scabbard of Drinwyn was no longer hung from Elonwy's shoulder. "But then what?"
"It's lucky you went unconscious," Elonwy continued. "You missed the worst of it. There was the earthquake and the Horned King burning until he was just, well, broke apart. It wasn't pleasant. The truth of the matter is, I'd rather not talk about it. It still gives me bad dreams, even when I'm not asleep."
Taran gritted his teeth. "Elonwy," he said at last, "I want you to tell me very slowly and carefully what happened. If you don't, I'm going to be angry and you're going to be sorry."
"How can I tell you anything?"
Elonwy said, deliberately pronouncing every word and making extravagant grimaces as she did so.
"If you don't want me to talk."
She shrugged.
"Well, in any case," she resumed at her usual breathless rate, "as soon as the army saw the Horned King was dead, they practically fell apart too. Not the same way, naturally. With them, it was more sort of running away, like a herd of rabbits. No, that isn't right, is it? But it was pitiful to see grown men so frightened. Of course, by the time the Sons of Dawn had their chance to attack, you should have seen the golden banners and such handsome warriors." Elonwy sighed. It was like, I don't even know what it was like."
And Henwen?
"She hasn't stirred from this chamber ever since they brought you here," said Elonwy. "Neither have I," she added, with a glance at Taran. She's a very intelligent pig, Elan Willie went on. Oh, she doesn't get frightened. She does get frightened and lose her head once in a while, I suppose. And she can be very stubborn when she wants, which sometimes makes me wonder how much difference there is between pigs and the people who keep them. I'm not mentioning anyone in particular, you understand.
The door opposite Taryn's couch opened partway. Around it appeared the spiky yellow head and pointed nose of Fluter Flam.
"So you're back with us!" cried the bard. "Oh, as you might say, we're back with you!"
Gurgi and the dwarf, who had been standing behind the bard, now rushed in, despite Elonwy's protests. They crowded around Taryn. Fluter and Doli showed no sign of injury, but Gurgi's head was bound up, and he moved with a limp.
"Yes, yes," he cried. "Gurgi fought for his friends with slashings and gashings. What smitings! Feast warriors strike him about his poor tender head, but valiant Gurgi does not flee. Oh, no!"
Taryn smiled at him, deeply touched. "I am sorry about your poor tender head," he said, putting a hand on Gurgi's shoulder, "and that a friend should be wounded for my sake."
"What joy! What crashings, smashings, clashings! Ferocious Gurgi fills wicked warriors with awful terror and outcries."
"It's true," said the bard. "He was the bravest of us all. I thought my stumpy friend here can do surprising things with his axe."
Doli, for the first time, grinned.
"Never thought any of you had any kind of metal to show," he said, attempting to be gruff. "Took you all for milksops at first. Deepest apologies," he added with a bow.
"We held off the warband," Fluter said, "until we were sure you were well and away. Some of them should have occasion to think unkindly of us for a while to come."
The bard's face lit up.
"There we were," he cried, "fighting like madmen, hopelessly outnumbered, but a flam never surrenders. I took three at once, slash, thrust. Another seized me from behind, the wretched coward, but I flung him off, and we disengaged them and made for Caer Dathil, chopping and hacking all the way, beset on all sides."
Taryn expected Fluter's harp strings to sunder at any moment. To his surprise, they held firm.
"And so," Fluter concluded with a carefree shrug, "that was our part. Rather easy when you come down to it. I had no fear of things going badly, not for an instant."
A string broke with a deep twang. Fluter bent down to Taryn.
"Terrified," he whispered. "Absolutely green."
Elonwy seized the bard and thrust him toward the door. "Be gone," she cried. "All of you. You'll wear him out with your chatter."
The girl shoved Gurgi and the dwarf after Fluter.
"And stay out. No one's to come in until I say they can."
"Not even I."
Taryn started up at a familiar voice. Gwydion stood in the doorway. For a moment, Taryn did not recognize him. Instead of the stained cloak and coarse jacket, Gwydion wore the shining raiments of a prince. His rich mantle hung in deep folds. On a chain at his throat gleamed a sun-shaped disc of gold. His green eyes shone with new depth and power. Taryn saw him now as he had always imagined him. Heedless of his wounded arm, Taryn sprang from the couch. The tall figure strode towards him. The authority of the warrior's bearing made Taryn drop to one knee.
"Lord Gwydion," he mumbled.
"That is no greeting from friend to friend," said Gwydion,
gently raising Taryn to his feet.
"It gives me more pleasure to remember an assistant pig keeper who feared I would poison him in the forest near Caer Dalbyn."
"After Spiral Castle," Taryn stammered, "and never thought I would see you again." He clasped Gwydion's hand and wept unashamedly.
"A little more alive than you are," Gwydion smiled.
He helped Taryn seat himself on the couch.
"But how did—" Taryn began
as he noticed a blackened, battered weapon at Gwydion's side. Gwydion saw the question on Taryn's face.
"A gift," he said, "a royal gift from a young lady."
"I girded it on him myself," Elonwy interrupted. She turned to Gwydion. "I told him not to draw it, but he's impossibly stubborn."
"Fortunately, you did not unsheathe it entirely," Gwydion said to Taryn. "I fear the flame of Drinwyn would have been too great even for an assistant pig keeper."
"It is a weapon of—"
"It is a weapon of power, as Elonwy recognized. Gwynion added, so ancient that I believed it no more than a legend. There are still deep secrets concerning Drinwyn, unknown even to the wisest. Its loss destroyed Spiral Castle, and was a severe blow to Aran.
With a single firm gesture, Gwynion drew the blade and held it aloft. The weapon glittered blindingly. In fear and wonder, Taryn shrank back, his wound throbbing anew. Gwynion quickly returned the blade to its scabbard.
As soon as I saw Lord Gwynion, Illyrmwë put in, with an admiring glance at him, I knew he must be the one who should keep the sword. I must say I'm glad to have done with the clumsy thing.
Do stop interrupting, Taryn cried. Let me find out what happened to my friend before you start babbling.
I shall not weary you with a long tale, Gwynion said. You already know Aran's threat has been turned aside. He may strike again, how or where no man can guess, but for the moment there is little to fear.
What of Ashran? Taryn asked. And Spiral Castle?
I was not in Spiral Castle when it crumbled, Gwynion said. Ashran took me from my cell and bound me to a horse. With the Cauldronborn, we rode to the castle of Oeth Enoeth.
Oeth Enoeth?
It is a stronghold of Anuvin, Gwynion said. Not far from Spiral Castle, raised when Aran held wider sway over Prydain. A place of death, its walls are filled with human bones. I could foresee the torment Ahtran had planned for me. Yet before she thrust me into its dungeons, she gripped my arm. Why do you choose death, Lord Gwynion? She cried, when I can offer you eternal life and power beyond the grasp of mortal men. I ruled Prydain long before Aran, Ahtran told me, and it was I who made him king over Anuvin. It was I who gave him power, though he used it to betray me. But now, if you desire it, you shall take your place on the high throne of Aran himself and rule in his stead. I will gladly I will overthrow Aran, I answered, and I will use those powers to destroy you along with him. Raging, she cast me into the lowest dungeon, Gwynion said. I have never been closer to my death than in Oeth Enoeth. How long I lay there, I cannot be sure, Gwynion continued. In Oeth Enoeth, time is not as you know it here. It is better that I do not speak of the torments Ashran had devised. The worst were not of the body, but of the spirit, and for these the most painful was despair. Yet even in my deepest anguish I clung to hope, for there is about Anath Oeneth. If a man withstands it, even death will give up its secrets to him. I withstood it, Gwynion said quietly. And, at the end, much was revealed to me which before had been clouded. Of this, too, I shall not speak. It is enough for you to know that I understood the workings of life and death, of laughter and tears, endings and beginnings. I saw the truth of the world and knew no chains could hold me. My bonds were light as dreams. At that moment the walls of my prison melted.
What became of Ahtran?
Illyrmwë asked.
I do not know, Gwynion said. I did not see her thereafter. For some days I lay concealed in the forest to heal my injuries of my body. Spiral Castle was in ruin when I returned to seek you, and there I mourned your death.
As we mourned yours, Taryn said.
I set out for Caer Dathil again, Gwynion continued. For a time I followed the same path Fluda chose for you, though I did not cross the valley until much later. By then I had outdistanced you a little. That day the Gwythaint plunged from the sky and flew directly toward me. To my surprise, it neither attacked nor sped away after it had seen me, but fluttered before me, crying strangely. The Gwythaint's language is no longer secret to me, nor is the speech of any living creature, and I understood a band of travelers was journeying from the hills nearby, and a white pig accompanied them.
I hastened to retrace my steps. By then, Henwin sensed I was close at hand. When she ran from you, Gwydion said to Terran, she ran not in terror, but to find me. What I learned from her was more important than I suspected, and I understood why Aran's champion sought her desperately. He too realized she knew the one thing that could destroy him.
What was that? Terran asked urgently.
She knew the Horned King's secret name.
His name? Terran cried in astonishment. I never realized a name could be so powerful.
Yes, Gwydion answered. Once you have courage to look upon evil, seeing it for what it is and naming it by its true name, it is powerless against you and you can destroy it. Yet, with all my understanding, he said, reaching down and scratching the white pig's ear, I could not have discovered the Horn King's name without Henwin. Henwin told me this secret in the forest, and I had no need of letter sticks or tomes of enchantment, for we could speak as one heart and mind to another. The Gwythaints circling overhead led me to the Horned King. The rest you know.
Where is the Gwythaint now? Asked Terran.
Gwydion shook his head. I do not know, but I doubt she will ever return to Anuvin, for Aran would rend her to pieces once he learned what she had done. I only know she has repaid your kindness in the fullest measure. Rest now, Gwydion said. Later we shall speak of happier things.
Lord Gwydion, Alanwë called, as he rose to leave. What was the Horned King's secret name?
Gwydion's lined face broke into a smile. It must remain a secret, he said, then patted the girl gently on the cheek. But I assure you, it was not half as pretty as your own.
A few days afterward, when Terran had regained strength enough to walk unaided, Gwydion accompanied him through Caer Dathil. Standing high on a hill, the fortress alone was big enough to hold several Caer Dalbans. Terran saw armorer's shops, stables for the steeds of warriors, breweries, weaving rooms. Cottages cluttered in the valley below, and clear streams ran golden in the sunlight. Later, Gwydion summoned all the companions to the great hall of Caer Dathil, and there, amid banners and hedges of spears, they received the gratitude of King Math, son of Mathwanwë, ruler of the House of Dawn. The white-bearded monarch, who looked as old as Dalban and as testy as even and was even more talkative than Elonwë. But when, and at last, he had finished one of the longest speeches Terran had ever heard, the companions bowed, and a guard of honor bore King Math from the hall on a litter draped with cloth of gold. As Terran and his friends were about to take their leave, Gwydion called to them.
"These are small gifts for great valor," he said. But it is in my power to bestow them, which I do with a glad heart, and with hope that you will treasure them, not so much for their value as for the sake of remembrance. To Fluda Flam shall be given one harp string. Though all his others break, this shall forever hold, regardless of how many gallant extravagances he may put onto it. And its tone shall be truest and most beautiful. To Doli of the Fair Folk shall be granted the power of invisibility, so long as he chooses to retain it. To faithful and valiant Gurki shall be given a wallet of food which shall always be full. Guard it well, it is one of the treasures of Prydain. To Elonwë of the House of Lyr shall be given a ring of gold set with a gem carved by the ancient craftsmen of the Fair Folk. It is precious, but to me her friendship is even more. And to Tauren of Caer Dalban, here Gwydion paused, the choice of his reward has been the most difficult of all.
I ask no reward, Terran said. I want no friend to repay me for what I did willingly, out of friendship, and for my own honor.
Gwydion smiled. Terran of Caer Dalban, he said, You are still as touchy and headstrong as ever. Believe that I know what you yearn for in your heart. The dreams of heroism, of worth, of achievement are noble ones, but you, not I, must make them come true. Ask me whatever else, and I shall grant it."
Taran bowed his head. "In spite of all that has befallen me, I have come to love the valleys and mountains of your northern lands, but my thoughts have turned more and more to Caer Dalbyn. I long to be home."
Gwydion nodded. "So it shall be."
Chapter 20. Welcomes. The journey to Caer Dalbyn was swift and unhindered, for the lords of the southern Cantrevs, their power broken, had slunk back, each to his own tribe throne. Taran and his companions, with Gwydion himself leading, rode south through the valley of Ystrad. Elonwy, who had heard so much of Taran's talk of Cole and Dalbyn, would not be denied a visit, and she too rode with them. Gwydion had given each of the companions a handsome steed. To Taran he had given the finest, the gray silver-maned stallion, Melinas, of the lineage of Melengar, and as swift, Henwen rode triumphantly on a horse litter, looking intensely pleased with herself. Caer Dalbyn had never seen so joyous a welcome, though by the time Taran was not positive about what Dalbyn had or had not seen, with such feasting that even Gurki had his fill for once. Cole embraced Taran, who was amazed that such a hero would deign to remember an assistant pig-keeper, as well as Elonwy, Henwen, and anyone else he could get his hands on. His face beamed like a winter fire, and his bald crown glowed with delight. Dalbyn interrupted his meditations to be present at the feast, though soon after the festivities he withdrew to his chamber and was not seen for some time. Later, he and Gwydion spent several hours alone, for there were important matters Gwydion would reveal only to the old enchanter. Gurgi, making himself completely at home, snored under a pile of hay in the barn, while Fluter and Doli went off exploring. Taran showed Elonwy Henwen's enclosure, where the pig chuckled and grunted as happily as before.
"So this is where it all began," Elonwy said. "I don't want to sound critical, but I don't think you should have had all that trouble keeping her in. Caer Dalbyn is as lovely as you said, and you should be glad to be home," she went on. "It's like suddenly remembering where you put something you've been looking for."
"Yes, I suppose it is," Taran said, leaning on the railing and examining it closely.
"What will you do now?" asked Elonwy. "I expect you'll go back to being an assistant pigkeeper."
Without looking up, Taran nodded. "Elonwy," he said, with hesitation, I was wondering. Before he could finish, Cole came hurrying up and whispered that Dalbyn would like to see him privately.
"Elonwy,"
Taran began again, then stopped abruptly and strode off to the cottage. When he entered the chamber, Dalbyn was writing with a great quill in the Book of Three. As soon as he saw Taran, he shut the volume quickly and put it aside.
"Well now," Dalbyn said, "I should like the two of us to speak quietly to each other. First, I am interested to learn what you think of being a hero. I dare say you feel rather proud of yourself. Although," he added, "I do not gain that impression from your face."
"I have no just cause for pride," Taran said, taking his usual place on the familiar bench. "It was Gwydion who destroyed the Horned King, and Henwen helped him do it. But Gurgi, not I, found her. Doli and Fluter fought gloriously while I was wounded by a sword that I had no right to draw, and Elonwy was the one who took the sword from the barrow in the first place. As for me, what I mostly did was make mistakes."
"My, my," said Dalbyn. "Those are complaints enough to dampen the merriest feast. Though what you say may be true, you have cause for a certain pride nonetheless. It was you who held the companions together and led them. You did what you set out to do, and Henwen is safely back with us. If you made mistakes, you recognize them. As I told you, there are times when the seeking counts more than the finding. Does it truly matter, Dobbin went on, which of you did what, since all shared the same goal and the same danger? Nothing we do is ever done entirely alone. There is a part of us in everyone else. You, of all people, should know that. From what I hear, you have been as impetuous as your friend, Fluda. I have been told, among other things, of a night when you drove headfirst into a thorn bush, and you have certainly felt as sorry for yourself as Gurki, and like Dolly, striven for the impossible.
Yes, admitted Terran, but that is not all that troubles me. I have dreamt often of Kaer Dobbin, and I love it, and you and Cole, more than ever. I asked for nothing better than to be at home, and my heart rejoices. Yet it is a curious feeling. I have returned to the chamber I slept in, and found it smaller than I remember. The fields are beautiful, yet not quite as I recalled them. And I am troubled, for I wonder now if I am to be a stranger in my own home. Dobbin shook his head.
No, that you shall never be. But it is not Kaer Dobbin which has grown smaller. You have grown bigger. That is the way of it.
And there is Elonwy, Terran said. What will become of her? Is it possible you would let her stay with us? Dobbin pursed his lips and toyed with the pages of the Book of Three.
By all rights, he said, the Princess Elonwy should be returned to her kinsmen. Yes, she is a princess, did she not tell you? But there is no hurry about that. She might consent to stay, perhaps if you spoke to her.
Terran sprang to his feet. I shall. He hurried from the chamber and ran to Henwen's enclosure. Elonwy was still there, watching the oracular pig with interest. You're to stay, Terran cried. I've asked Dobbin. Elonwy tossed her head. I suppose, she said, it never occurred to you to ask me. Yes, but, I mean, he stammered, I didn't think.
You usually don't.
Elonwy sighed.
No matter, Cole is straightening up a place for me.
Already, cried Terran. How did he know? How did you know? Said Elonwy. Said Henwen. This is the end of The Book of Three by Lloyd Alexander.